This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
The COVID-19 bill offered up by the White House is the biggest story in the nation's capital. It certainly is not the only story, but it's a large part of the conversation, will be a large part of our conversation with Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, who is nice enough to join us. Ilhan, thank you so much. As always, appreciate you coming on. As you know, the bill passed in the House over the weekend, partisan vote outside of a couple Democrats voting against it. But bottom line, it did pass. It is now going to be debated in the Senate. But at the same time, we had this ruling by the Senate parliamentarians saying that they view it as, since this is a part of a reconciliation bill, that a huge part of this bill, which is the raise of the federal minimum wage from $7.25 to $15 over a period of time, cannot be a part of this bill. You and other progressives have come out today and said that Joe Biden and his administration, that they should challenge this, that a bureaucrat cannot be the one to say this cannot be a part of the bill. How would that work, and what happens if it is not part of the bill when it comes back to the House?
Well, thank you so much, Chat, for having me, and that's a really great sum up of how things have been going. I really truly believe that we need $15 and we need it now. And it is, you know, a fact that a single and elected official can't really block the will of a policy that's supported by 2/3 of the American people. And allowing for that to happen is actually shameful. I believe that we do still have the ability to maneuver this obstacle and deliver this package with the $15 minimum wage. I don't know if we have the willpower, and that's, you know, kind of what myself and others are pushing for the administration and Senate Democrats to have.
So let's stay with that, because you know Joe Biden is the president, but he tells everybody he's still, you know, a creature. He's a part of the Senate. And he'll talk about how he's so respectful of the Senate rules. If Joe Biden and the administration come out some point this week and say, we are going to respect and accept the ruling of the parliamentarian, what will you say about that?
I mean, I still do think that's like an unacceptable decision to make. Especially knowing that there has been historically times where those who have respected the advice of the parliamentarian have said, you know, your role is to be advisory. And at the moment, we are, you know, going to overwrite this advice and we're going to move this policy forward. One senator who joined, a Democratic senator who joined with a Republican, was Mondale, who we ended up referencing in the letter that we sent to Vice President Harris, who has done that in in a time where they didn't like they respected, obviously, but did not like the fact that the ruling of the parliamentarian was hindering their ability to push forward a policy that was going to have a real impact on people's lives, like the raising of the $15 minimum wage will. And I think it is important to remember that this is a policy that we've campaigned on for over 10 years. It is a priority of the administration's. It's a priority for Democrats in the House and in the Senate. And we know with the filibuster, we're not going to be able to pass a standalone bill. This is probably our only chance to have a minimum wage increase for 28 million Americans. And we really don't have an option to go back to those who believed we would deliver and say, sorry, you know, we decided to listen to the advice of the parliamentarian and we didn't deliver on the agenda that we campaigned on when we had the opportunity to.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because I have heard some Democrats and more so Republicans, I want to emphasize more so Republicans, say, take it out of the bill. We can debate this later in the year. And if they want to have a vote, we can have a vote. Do you believe, because of the filibuster and the need to get 60 votes, and because the Senate is split 50-50, that that sounds good by the Republicans, but that realistically it's not going anywhere if it isn't in this bill?
Yeah, I mean, Republicans are gaslighting, you know, the American public. We did send them a standalone bill. The $15 minimum wage bill was a standalone bill. We passed it in the last Congress. We sent it to the Senate. They didn't give the bill the opportunity to be debated. And for them now to say, oh, why don't you send a standalone bill? It could be debated. We could figure out a compromise. We can negotiate. They had the bill. They could have compromised. They could have debated. They could have negotiated something. They chose not to, because the reality, Chad, is that the Republicans are not interested in helping working class Americans. They're not interested in helping these 28 million Americans get a minimum wage increase. They're not interested in trying to uplift people out of poverty. And you and I are Minnesotans, and we're talking to Minnesotans, and we know that when Minneapolis raised the minimum wage and St. Paul raised the minimum wage, the Republicans in that Minnesota House have tried to come up with preemptive laws to stop them from having the ability to do that. So it's not true that these people are interested in actually raising the minimum wage so that people can make, you know, a decent wage to live and have a decent life.
Would you accept that it doesn't get to $15, which you and millions of individuals across this country believe it should be? But would you accept a lower number if the White House did challenge it, but let's say the number was closer to $11 or $12, a number I believe that Joe Manchin has said, because, as you know, even if it was included right now, you have a senator from West Virginia, a senator from Arizona who've been very skeptical on whether they would vote in favor of the minimum wage. In fact, Manchin's a no. Would you accept a lower number, say it's not everything I want, but it's progress, and that's enough for now?
Well, two things to that. The $15 minimum wage hike that we have in the COVID bill is that actual compromise that you're speaking to. It does not get to 15 for another 5 years. And so it's a slow rollout, a slow hike to 15 in 5 years. And, you know, I think that in itself is compromise. And secondly, if Joe Manchin and, you know, the senator from Arizona and the senator from West Virginia are not in support of a policy that is 60 or plus supported by their constituents, then let them say no and have them take that vote. I don't think we should allow them to hide behind a ruling from a parliamentarian and not force them to say to their constituents, you do not deserve to have a wage increase.
Congresswoman Ilhan Omar is with us. I'm getting number text on it, and it matched up with something I was going to say. You certainly have a lot of corporations who make a right. great deal of money, and they can't afford this. You also have millions of small businesses around the country where their margins are very small. And many of them will say, if this happens, yes, I will pay those individuals who I need to employ for my business to succeed, but what's going to happen is I'm not going to employ as many. So does that truly help out as many people as it should? When you hear those comments from small business owners, what do you say to those points?
In these fear-driven arguments really have been around for a really long time. You know, when we were last debating the $15 minimum wage in the last Congress, I sit on the Education and Labor Committee, and we heard from a number of small businesses. We've heard from a number of small businesses in our own state. Actually, a couple of our constituents in the 5th came out to D.C. to testify in favor of raising the minimum wage, because people know that, you know, when you are able to pay your employees a decent wage, you end up ultimately saving money, because when workers are protected and are respected, there isn't a lot of turnover, and you save money in that way. And so, you know, Minneapolis, which is one of the biggest cities that I represent out of the 15 municipalities that I represent, has had a minimum wage increase. Minnesota in itself raised its minimum wage in 2013. And we've seen really job growth and not job loss. And so I don't believe that these fear-driven arguments should dictate whether we choose to help people or not.
So if the bill comes back from the Senate to the House and it has many elements that you like, but it does not have the minimum wage increase in it, or it doesn't have the number that you believe is necessary, are you a definitive no?
I mean, we've got a really long time before we can get to having a conversation on what needs to happen in the House if the bill is returned. Right now, our focus is trying to have as much pressure on the Senate in trying to do the right thing. You know, I obviously represent a district that would enormously benefit from having this package pass, and will make a decision, as I always do, in trying to make sure that my constituents get the resources that they need.
One last topic for you. I think it's important, and I think it should be more important to the public. Jamal Khashoggi was brutally murdered. Mm-hmm. The previous administration, to me and others, looked the other way and cited the money transaction between the United States and Saudi Arabia, and also acknowledged the very important role many believe Saudi Arabia plays for the United States and the Middle East. Joe Biden on the campaign trail was very strong that this was on the crown prince and he should be sanctioned. And now more information has come out that you know better than I, that this is on the crown prince. Seems to me so far that the administration hasn't lived up to the strong words that Joe Biden said about punishing and sanctioning the crown prince and Saudi Arabia itself. What do they need to do?
They need to keep their word. They need to be as tough and as appalled as they were when the administration was under Trump. It is really, to me, unconscionable that we have the actual facts of the case that we didn't before when we were outraged, but now we actually have the facts. That back up the outrage that we all felt, and, you know, Biden, felt, and to not choose, to do something, to hold, the Prince of Saudi Arabia accountable is unconscionable, which is why, you know, my office is working on drafting legislation to sanction him and hold him accountable for the murder of Khashoggi. His wife came and spoke to the Foreign Affairs Committee when we did a hearing on the assault on journalists across the world. And it was heartbreaking to his fiancée, it was heartbreaking. Yep. To hear from her. And, you know, she's recently said that inaction from Biden will be something that would haunt him for the rest of his life. And, you know, I think she's right. We need to make sure that the actions of the prince haunt him forever, and that we're not the ones that are haunted by inaction.
I agree with you 100% on that point, that this administration cannot tippy-toe in this area. Congresswoman, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.